Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 37, recorded January 18th, 2012. NOPA. Triangulation is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. It's time for triangulation, or in this case, quadrangulation. Tom Merritt, Leo Laporte, yes, don't slam your TV. Do not. We are in black and white today, because today is January 18th, 2012. The internet-wide protest against the Stop Online Piracy Act in the House of Representatives in the United States, the Protect IP Act in the Senate in the United States. And really, this is a global protest. I think should be a global protest, because while these two bills in particular are U.S. bills all over the world, this is a massive issue for everyone who cares about a free and open internet. And there are plenty of countries, Spain most recently, France before them, that have passed laws much like this that are designed to, in my opinion, break the internet to protect copyright holders and business interests. Tom Merritt is here from TNT. And joining us today, two guys from one of the many sites that blacked out on the internet today, boingboing.net. Two of its best-known editors, Mark Fraunfelder, who I think you were a founder of Boing Boing, right, Mark?
Yeah, back in the early days. It was a print zine in the late 80s.
When it was a zine. And Rob Beskitsa, when did you join the Boing Boing family, Rob?
2008, I think.
He's a more recent boinger. It's great to have both of you. Mark, tell us how the decision went down to go black on this day.
Somebody from Reddit sent an email to me and said, "We are shutting down Reddit on the 18th. You guys should do it too." And so I forwarded that email to the editors, and immediately everyone said, "Yeah, let's do it." And that was about all it took. And then we got our system administrator to create this great page when you go to Boing Boing that says 503 service intentionally unavailable. And you can see it right there on the screen. And we have links to information about it, signed a petition. And it's been good.
What's the response been like?
I've gotten a few emails of people saying thanks and that they've done the same. My favorite response was somebody sent an email to Rob saying, "I know you're shut down, but could you please blog this today?"
That's funny.
No one will see it, though. I hope, Rob, you wrote the story.
I keep hitting publish, but nothing happens.
We've learned earlier today, we heard that 29 members of Congress had today alone recanted. We've heard another 13 now have changed their position from pro-SOPA to anti-SOPA. So that's a total of 42 members of Congress, 4 million signatures on Google, which also at Google.com put a big black Band-Aid over the Google logo and asked people to sign a petition. 4 million in one day. There's the Google site. And there's the infographic, which is just dramatic. More than being, to me now, I think the story is more than PIPA and SOPA. I think this is the first time I can remember that the citizens of the internet united accomplished something so dramatic. And this is the day. Somebody was saying on This Week in Google, I think it was Matt Cutts, said, "I wonder which news magazine will pick this up and say this was the day that the internet sat up and took notice."
It definitely seems to be the day that the internet got some political awareness that is coherent and all directed in the same place. The internet's had political awareness since day one,
right?
But it's usually little agreement at each other,
right?
Yeah, and this is unified, and it's actually had a measurable effect. You see representatives, senators and representatives both, changing their positions. And it's pretty much a direct result of this. Mark, do you think, what do you think is having the most effect out there in getting the representatives to take notice?
I think the shutdowns have really made a big difference. And I had an idea that it was going to work when the MPAA's Senator Dodd, former Senator Dodd, said that it was a dangerous gimmick.
Yeah.
That word dangerous meant that it was going to be effective.
It hurt.
And it really has been.
It's not dangerous until it's working.
Yeah. Exactly. And it worked. It's been great. I think that people are realizing that they don't want to hand over the domain name system to Rupert Murdoch and a handful of other robber barons who've already shown that they're going to happily abuse the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to shut down critics and perfectly legitimate fair use examples of copyrighted materials. They've shown their true colors already, and it's not really a pleasing palette.
Look at this post on Marco Rubio's Facebook page. He's a member of Congress from Florida. I have decided to withdraw my support for the Protect IP Act. Furthermore, I encourage Senator Reid to abandon his plan to rush the bill to the floor. Instead, we should take more time to address the concerns raised by all sides and come up with new legislation that addresses Internet piracy while protecting free and open access to the Internet. Now, that's the key here, isn't it? New legislation. This is not a victory we can go home and celebrate and then take the rest of the week off.
No, it brings up the fundamental question, which is, do we need more legislation? What is the cause? What is the harm that is trying to be addressed by this? Rob, do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, do you? Obviously, I don't think any of us are in favor of breaking the law, but do we need better enforcement?
Well, that's the thing, is it's always framed as if you have to choose between accepting piracy or having a free internet. But the thing is, they've been trying these new laws for years, and they've been aggressively litigating, and none of it has had the slightest impact on piracy. So, you know, even if they get everything they want from these laws, even if they pass the OPRA PIPA and everything else, there's no reason to think that pirates wouldn't just find a way around it. They've always found a way around this stuff in the past.
Well, I don't know. The Pro IP Act passed, and that affects domestic websites, and we don't see any piracy domestically anymore, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's all disappeared.
But, you know, and that's the thing, is like, so how do you create a law which is actually effective at stopping piracy, which doesn't destroy the internet? And it's like, I think that beats me.
Well, I think there's a more fundamental question, too, which is, what harm is piracy having? And when the General Accountability Office says, we can't tell harm, we're not saying there isn't harm, we're not saying there is harm, there is no evidence of harm. When you have the industry outperforming other industries during a recession, and there is no evidence that there's any reduction in creative output, I'm uncertain what the basis for wanting further enforcement is, other than just fear-mongering and saying, oh, but people are breaking the law out there. Sure, people are breaking the law shoplifting. Does that mean we need to hire FBI guards to come in and investigate Walmarts?
Well,
go ahead, Rob.
You have a very moneyed industry which can say what it likes. It can cook up its own statistics. It can publicize them. And it has very close access to ears on Congress. So it's relatively easy for them to spin a yarn or two about hypothetical jobs, hypothetical lost sales. And by the time it gets to the, you know, to a lot of media outlets, those things are kind of accepted as fact when there really isn't anything under them.
Isn't it there right, though, after all, to say, well, maybe piracy doesn't hurt us, doesn't matter, we don't want you stealing our stuff? Well, I don't think they can see the piracy.
It's already illegal, though.
True.
And I think from the little I know about this Open Act that Ron Wyden and Daryl Issa are introducing.
Wyden and Issa are anti-PIPA and SOPA.
Right, and they have an alternative, something called the Open Act. And their solution is to go after the payment processors and ad networks to make them stop servicing piracy websites. And that seems like a more sensible approach rather than criminalizing innocent websites and then tasking them with the burden of monitoring every downstream website that they link to.
And it's their right to do that. I have some question about whether something like that would work. They tried that with spammers. It didn't work. Notice how well spam has been stopped.
Right. But we don't see them trying to ramrod legislation through to go after spammers.
No, although we have seen in the past black hole attempts to do the same thing, blacklist spammers with maps, orbs, and other black hole systems. And as Steve Gibson pointed out earlier today, that didn't work and, in fact, had exactly the effect that you might expect from PIPA and SOPA. It hurt many legitimate emailers while not stopping spammers in the least. And I think that's really the problem with these kinds of draconian solutions. I can't see anything on the face of it wrong with the Open Act.
Seems like a much more reasonable starting point to have a discussion about, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but it remains to be seen. I think what's happened, unfortunately, and this is what Nilay Patel's position was on Twit when we talked about this about a month ago. You got to find some way, some compromise that you can live with to protect these copyright holders against piracy so that you have a point of compromise. And I think what one of the things that we want to do is be very pure about this and say, no, nothing. No, don't touch the Internet. Is there, and I guess that's what you were asking earlier, yeah, but is there a compromise solution possible? And I agree with Mark. It's hard to think of one because once something is bits, any attempt to control them is, in my opinion, doomed to failure in the same way that, you couldn't copy protect DVDs. You couldn't, and they tried much harder with Blu-rays. You still can't copy protect Blu-rays. Once stuff is bits, boy, it gets out there and it has a way of flowing. Your colleague, Cory Doctorow, has done some great stuff on this, Mark. It's his position that these guys won't rest until they basically hobble computing in the Internet. He says they see these as piracy tools.
Yeah, I think that the major, the handful of major media companies would love to be able to control the Internet, control the domain name system, be able to shut down critics. And that really is a lot of what these bills are about. And they've got a lot of people in Congress eating out of the palm of their hand. I really like what David Carr said in the New York Times today. People who don't understand the web should not try to re-engineer it.
Yeah.
That's what's been happening.
Yeah.
Well, that's a huge problem with what's going on here. Because I think going back to what you're saying, Nilay was saying, is the practical matter is the industry wants to be able to enforce copyright more than they have the ability to now. So how do we do that in a way that doesn't affect the web? And what we're seeing with SOPA and PIPA is legislation written by people who I think in some cases honestly feel like we're just whining. And it's not going to have these dramatic effects because they don't actually understand how the web works.
It's just not going to work at all.
They don't understand that DNS blocking just makes you go around DNS. They don't understand that cutting off payment providers means you find other payment providers. They don't understand that delisting from a search engine means you move to another site and you get relisted in another way. It's none of this stuff is effective.
Mark, you said something scary, though. You said that these people, it's not merely piracy. They want to constrain free speech. They want to constrain criticism. Is that? Tell me more about that. Is that really something we should fear?
Well, I think so. I mean, even though these bills have been somewhat defanged, SOPA and PIPA still allow sites to be shut down without the accuser having to prove a copyright violation.
That's what happened to you. That's what happened to us.
Yeah, that's like a violation of due process.
It's prior restraint, too.
Yeah, it's insane. And I cannot even believe that this kind of thing is being considered by Congress.
I fear we live in a very different world than we grew up in, a world where habeas corpus has been suspended by the National Defense Authorization Act. I think we live in a very different world, unfortunately.
Yeah, I do too.
The freedoms and the rights that we came to expect as Americans growing up are rapidly being eroded. It's very sad. Here from Cory Doctorow, a link that says Swiss government study finds internet downloads increase sales.
Yep. This is what I'm talking about. Where's the evidence? I mean, they did a study and they found that because they don't have the same laws that we have, and they're being pressured to change their laws, they decided to look at it and say, okay, let's see the fact. What they say in their law in Switzerland right now is that if you download something for your own personal use, it's legal, that you're not breaking the law. And they found that what happened is they sold more stuff.
Also, downloaders are more frequent visitors to concerts. Game downloaders buy more games than those who don't. And in the music industry, lesser-known bands profit most from file sharing.
It's almost as if the internet has actually resulted in a proliferation of competitive content, which is damaging their market, rather than opportunities for piracy.
That I believe. If I were, you know, really, let's give these guys credit. Right now we're saying they're stupid, they think the internet, but, you know, one of the reasons we went black and white is because I wanted this, my kind of under, you know, the subtext of this is these guys want to turn back the clock to the 1950s where there was no internet and computers. You know, they see those as piracy devices, but I think you're saying something, Rob, that's very interesting and really much more nuanced. Maybe these guys aren't so dumb. Maybe they really understand, and this is true, that the biggest threat to their business model is not piracy, but YouTube, blogs, the inexpensive ability to make an album with a personal computer, then distribute it over the internet at no cost. Those are the real threats to their business model. Now, the smart thing, if they were really smart, would be to say, well, that's how can we capitalize on this? How can we take advantage of this? How can we make businesses out of this? What is it that we bring to the table that we could offer to these young independents so that we'd be of some value? Instead, they say, right. No, let's keep it the way it is.
Yeah, they're clinging to old business models that just don't work. You know, a great example is the way that they, when a new movie comes out or a DVD, it's released like months later in different areas around the world. They're not taking into account that on the internet, as soon as it's released in one country, it's available in every country. So people are going to be downloading like crazy, not because they don't want to buy it, but because they want to get it fast. And if the entertainment industry isn't going to make it available to the whole world at the same time, then that's what's going to happen, is that people are going to download it from whatever source they can find it.
Yeah, like Sherlock right now is being shown on the BBC.
Right.
Not going to be shown in the U.S. until May.
I
can watch it.
BitTorrent, baby.
I mean, I don't want to break the law, but if I want to break the law, I can watch
they're
it.
There's no way for me
to legally watch it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? iTunes, I think, has proven that if you make a legal alternative for people at a reasonable price, there's going to be people who steal it. But a lot of us understand that we want authors and creators and artists to make money.
Sure.
And so we want to support them with our money. You bought Jonathan Coulton's package set, his level 4 package set for 150. What was it?
$140.
Yeah. $140. He gives away his songs online.
Yeah,
you didn't have to do that.
Yeah, he doesn't. Let's put it this way: he doesn't stop people from getting his songs for free online. He doesn't go around and try to stop them. But he gives you an incentive to give him money for something worth value.
Louis C.K. $5, no copy protection. $1 million later, I think you can say that was a success. We can go on and on and on.
I have Jonathan Coulton's complete works in a button.
In a button.
Now, I can go and download them, but that's just not as cool. So I'm willing to pay for that. That's what you need to do. Folks like Jonathan Coulton, folks like MC Lars are out there working hard to make their money rather than sitting back and trying to rely on a system that took advantage of some natural quirks to make their money, which with the internet, those quirks have gone away.
Some of those people will download that stuff without paying for it. But the entertainment industry likes to pretend that one download from a BitTorrent site equals a lost sale. And that's not true. That's not true at all. A lot of people download things that they would never buy. So you can't say that's a one-to-one comparison.
I had a friend, I remember, in the days when software still came in on floppy disks, who had a closet full of floppy disks that went all the way up to the top of pirated. He admitted it, pirated software. But the discs were in the closet. He never used those programs. He was a collector. There was literally no harm to any of those companies because he had copies of every program, never used one of them.
He would have never paid for all of those.
He would have never bought that.
Yeah. They're trophies.
I think you can make a very good case that Photoshop – sold so well because so many people tried it for free. And those who needed it and wanted it bought it because you want a legitimate copy with the manuals and support and updates. And it was worth it to those people who used it. I think you can go on and on. I mean, I think everybody understands this. And everybody in our audience understands this. So I don't want to beat a dead horse. When we come back, let's take a break. We're talking with Mark Frauenfelder, who is one of the founders of BoingBoingBoingBoing.net, one of the sites that went dark today and is dark right now. Rob Beskiza, another editor at BoingBoing.net, and we're talking about copyright and in a highly unbalanced way. And that's fine, because I'll tell you what, I was watching mainstream networks. CNN, who owns CNN? Oh, Time Warner. CNN had Christopher Dodd, the president of the RIA and
he's
the MPAA,
been making the rounds
on
today.
Talked for about 5 minutes without rebuttal, without opposing points of view. So there's plenty of places you can get the opposing points of view. So we decided, screw fairness.
What was funny is today I've been doing a load of talking head interviews on television.
Good.
Expecting it to be incredibly adversarial. Like they've, you know, I'd be up against some guy from the Chamber of Commerce or lawyers for unions, for creative, like actors or whatever. And it's like, they're all very subdued. They kind of know that the game might be up.
I think they're shocked.
Yeah. So they're down to the point where they're saying that everyone is lying about it. They're at that point now.
Right.
So when they're at that point, I think they know that it's all over unless, you know, some kind of game changer comes along, like everyone dying.
I'd love to show, and if the chat room has been very good about passing along blackout sites, here's one called thefreshloaf.com, which I guess is a baking site, and they have, I love this, a stoplight. Look at the shadows and everything.
Yeah,
this
nice.
Is nicely
well
done. Well done, Floyd.
That was actually, sorry to jump in, but I believe that particular template there was designed by a fellow on Twitter, Zaxtronaut.
Zaxtronaut. So, oh, good. A lot of sites are adopting this then.
Yes, I think they are.
Yeah. Awesome. And thanks to Reddit for beginning this. It was Reddit's idea.
They sort of put their toes in the water.
Yeah, there. And they did a great job. I think they've been doing a great job. If you go to theoatmeal.com, it says, "Hi there. I drew a goat and a koala making love."
Uh-oh. NSFW.
Steamy, yes. "I drew the animals. I like making things on the internet, and I believe that love conquers all. But wait! Here's a photo of Oprah.
What?
Riding a jet ski.
Copyright infringement.
With Jesus. In outer space.
That's hilarious.
But if SOPA or PIPA gets through Congress, this animated GIF could be considered pirated, and my website could be shut down for hosting it without due process." We need to protect those. This is very funny. I love the oatmeal. We're going to have more in just a little bit with our guests, Rob Beskiza and Mark Frauenfelder from BoingBoing.net. Go to theoatmeal.com for the full animated GIF. Do it for the kittens. Do it for the jet skis. Do it for the love. Oh, dear.
I'm glad we made sure we got that back on.
We have defeated Chris Todd and the MPAA with bestiality gifts.
That's the only way.
Well worth going to theoatmeal.com to see the whole thing.
Is it GIF? It's GIF, isn't it? I always get that wrong.
That's a religious argument. You can say either way.
The thing that always flattens the argument is, well, the guy who invented the format tells me it's GIF. You know, he actually put a blog post up saying this is how I pronounce it. But so what? Why does he get to say what it's pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
GI could be gift. Giraffe. It could be anything.
Well, if it's an acronym, it probably should be GIF. But if it's a word,
G-I-F.
It would be GIF.
I always say GIF.
I say GIF.
So there.
Tomato.
Tomato.
Call.
You say potato. I say koala love. It is time to say hello to Audible.com. I am a big fan. I know you are, too. And I'm going to give you a free book from the audiobook source. 100,000 volumes now on Audible.com. Some of the best titles in the world. And I'll tell you, I am listening. You know what I'm listening to?
What?
You're
going
to laugh. I met when I was at... do you not get my... Are you not getting my computer? Is that... Okay. I was at CES. You know who I met? Mackenzie Phillips. Remember One Day at a Time?
Oh, yeah.
Mama and the Papa's daughter, Mackenzie Phillips.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She has a my God, it's just, oh, my God, it's horrible. I mean, it's good, but it's the story is...
is it about that?
It's about her life and her, you know, just her story is heartrending.
Like growing up Brady, except for One Day at a Time.
It's very much like growing up Brady. Very much. It's called High on Arrival. Anyway, I'm listening to this and I'm realizing there are so many great Hollywood memoirs by the people, read by the people in their voice. And yesterday, Andy Iannacco recommended just the most amazing book, which I didn't even know was out, which everybody should run and get. If you're a Michael Caine fan.
Which, by the way, just listening to him read, you guys were playing that on Mac.
Wasn't it awesome?
I didn't care what he says sometimes. It's just...
I don't know if I heard any words. I just heard his voice, Michael Caine. And his book is on Audible. It's called I don't even know what the title means. I don't care. It's Michael Caine, The Elephant to Hollywood. Michael Caine. Listen to his voice.
What's it all about, Alfie?
Yeah. Oh, my. Well, you know, his... Anyway, it's a long story. But anyway, listen.
People are terrible at Michael Caine impressions.
Would you do a Michael Caine for us, Rob?
No.
You're a wise man.
Do you have audio for my... Listen a little bit to the Michael Caine here. He's so good. Can you turn it up? You can't hear it? Oh, it's probably... I'm doing something wrong. Here, I'll tell you what, kids. Go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Sign up for the gold account. First book is free. First month's free. You get a free credit. Could be this. In fact, should be this. Download it and listen to it. You can hear the whole thing. The Elephant to Hollywood. I know. It's terrible. I should be able to do it better. You know what? If you listen to all 10.5 hours of this, you probably could do a perfect Michael Caine. That would be worth it.
You know, I was kind of mean there. Caine is actually like the hardest impression to do after Walken.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it is. It's renowned for its difficulty.
Really?
Because traditionally, there's the bad Michael Caine impression where
Caine impression. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and there's like, you know, there's... And that's the thing. And the fact that you can actually get close enough for it to be recognizable is proof that it isn't as hard as Walken. Because if you've ever heard someone do a terrible Walken impression, it just sounds like Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a cross between Hitler and Shatner.
A terrible... Shatner's another one.
Yeah.
Where it's not that it's hard. People think it's easy.
They imitate the imitation.
So, yeah. So bad, and that's all I have ever done
Look,
in my whole life.
There's my
Everyone
Obama
has been a part of my life since I first got to Hollywood. Although, in fact, I'd met Sean in London
really good,
back in the late 1950s at what was then called a bottle party. If someone was giving a party in those days and couldn't quite afford it, the invitation would be bring a bottle and a bird.
You just put a random F in front of words, apparently.
The Elephant to Hollywood. Anyway, get this free. Go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Actually, get any. You get a credit towards any book, and there's 100,000 of them. So find something you like. There's Dick Cavett. You know what? This would be good.
I'm reading Charles Stross's Rule 34 right now.
I love Charles Stross, and I want to read that book.
Yeah, it's good. It's about criminal spammers
and
internet memes in the near future.
I'm going to read that. Good record. See, this is the problem.
Yeah,
I got to say.
Really good one.
Whenever people who are Audible subscribers get together, it's like, oh, and then there's.
And to bring it full circle, it's narrated by Robert Ian McKenzie.
Oh.
Phillips. No. Phillips.
Okay. How about this? Dick Van Dyke. My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business, a memoir.
Hello, Mary. By Dick Van Dyke.
Talk about bad impressions.
Wow.
It's so lovely all day.
Just trip over a sofa.
Hello,
that's easier.
Mary.
Anyway.
With the black and white, that really works.
Random House Audio presents.
All right.
It's the Dumont Hour.
It really feels like that. AudiblePodcast.com/triangulation. I think from now on we're going to do these in black and white. Just every show.
I think it should be our premium tier. You have to pay.
You have to pay extra to get rid of the color.
Yeah.
Love that. We are talking with Mark Fraunfelder from BoingBoing.net. One of the creators and founders and editors, and Rob Beskiza. Am I saying that right? Beskiza.
Yeah, that's
that'll do. What does that mean in Italian?
Well, it's not actually Italian. As far as we know, it's like this weird gluing together of an Italian name and a German name by gypsies.
Ah, you're actually a gypsy. You're a pikey. Talk about a weird accent. The pikey accent from, what was that, from Snatch?
Oh, yeah.
What was Brad Pitt saying? So it's good to have Rob and Mark with us. We're talking about the reason we're in black and white today, which, of course, this is the day the Internet finally stood up and said no more. The anti-SOPA, anti-PIPA blackout day. So many sites down and blacked out. I guess in some ways the site that certainly pissed off Chris Dodd more than any other is Wikipedia's site. Wikipedia had a little JavaScript that would show briefly the page and then say, sorry.
Well, yeah. In fact, if you have no script running, you never see the blackout.
Yeah.
It's just a JavaScript.
That's okay.
Layover.
That's okay. If you really had to have the data, I guess you could go to it. But really, the thought experiment is imagine a world without free knowledge. For over a decade, Wikipedia says, we've spent millions of hours building the largest encyclopedia in human history. Right now, the U.S. Congress is considering legislation that could fatally damage the free and open Internet. I have a feeling this is the, you know, I'm not sure how many members of Congress read Boing Boing or watch Twit. My guess is Zippo, but I bet you half of them use Wikipedia to figure out what their kids are talking about. And so that one, I'm sure, hit home. Mark, going forward, I know Boing Boing's always been, besides a fun site, a site of marvelous things.
Happy mutants.
It's always been politically aware. What does the fight look like going forward? I don't want this day to go away. I want this spirit to continue. It's like Christmas.
It is. It's great. I think it is a significant milestone in the Internet getting together to, you know, as someone said, the Internet is occupying itself.
Yeah.
And we're making a difference. I mean, Rupert Murdoch is kind of freaking out on Twitter now.
I love it.
It's great. Yeah, his most recent tweet is, on SOPA, where are all the big film stars with many millions to use? Or to lose, I mean. And then another one he said was, it seems the blogosphere has succeeded in terrorizing many senators and congressmen who previously committed. Politicians all the same.
Well, Ashton Kutcher is anti-SOPA. Lonely Island is anti-SOPA. Amanda Palmer, Trent Reznor, Adam Savage, Neil Gaiman. They all signed an open letter to Washington.
Yeah, and 83 internet engineers are anti-SOPA. It isn't the blogosphere. It's so hard to explain to Rupert what the internet is. It isn't the blogosphere. This is called the internet. Wikipedia is not a blog.
The Association of Performing Arts Presenters, the Chorus America Association, Dance USA, National Alliance for Media, Art, and Culture, all opposed to SOPA.
And I don't think film stars have millions to lose here. I think it's true there is a democratization. I don't think George Clooney is going to lose millions of dollars. I don't think he's lost millions of dollars to piracy, and I don't think he's going to lose millions of dollars. But it may be a bigger threat to Rupert Murdoch and Fox, which he owns, the Fox Film Company, that people are creating films on YouTube and distributing them on the Internet. That might be, maybe Rupert stands to lose millions, not from piracy, but from competition.
Yeah, if you don't count any of the independent films made, for some of them without the intention of making money, if you don't count any of the independent artists that create music, again, some without the intention of making money, some with, it's easy to show a loss. You can also, if you don't count the fact that people can make their own entertainment, they can do their own things on the internet, as taking away from the time that they might have spent just sitting and staring at a movie or television. It's easy to make it look like you're in trouble, but easy is not what we should base good law on, I don't think.
He says Hollywood employs 2.2 million workers. That's also the argument Chris Dodd made. This is going to cost them their jobs. Huh? Really? Is that really the case?
It doesn't seem to be the case, no. You know, one of the greatest places to bust some of these myths is Ars Technica.
They've done a great job today.
And
decided to opt for informing
coverage,
people,
yeah,
as opposed to just going dark completely.
And one of the things I thought was interesting, there was a real nuanced article that explained that Hollywood actually makes all its money off blockbusters. So they lose money on more films than they make money on.
Right.
So it's not this one-to-one of like, oh, well, if someone pirated movie X, Hollywood lost this much money. You can't really equate the thing because it's a whole different accounting system that they've got going on. So it's hard. It's actually hard to tease out the effects. And the fact of the matter is that the blockbusters are still making money, and Hollywood is still making money.
How about this? Red 5 Studios, which developed Firefall, is shutting down for a day to protest SOPA, and they dropped out of E3. And they're going to take the money that they would have spent at E3.
$50,000.
To start an anti-SOPA crusade. Wow. I mean, this is a company who you could logically say is... Gaming companies probably most damaged by piracy of any company. Any business. And no. They're going to start the League for Gamers, a grassroots group of gamers, developers, and industry supporters who want to stand against legislation that's detrimental to the games industry. Why is this detrimental? Why would SOPA and PIPA be bad for an industry that is arguably the most pirated group of all? Mark or Rob, do you want to take a swing?
No
idea. Good question.
We should get... All right, somebody call these guys. What is wrong with you? Don't you know? So, piracy is affecting you? Rupert Murdoch's mad!
The thing I don't get about Rupert Murdoch is, you know, he's easy to make fun of, spending $550 million or whatever on trying to get a coup about the internet.
Yeah.
But he always actually puts his money into smart things. But once he's bought it, he doesn't know what to do with it. Or it's even worse than that. He tries to use it to shore up the old model of doing business that he imagines should persist forever. And it's like the MySpace, that was kind of obvious anyway. He bought this social network and then just had no idea what to use it for. But the really telling thing, I think, was the iPad newspaper. And the thing it's a really good newspaper. It's a fantastic newspaper, and journalists... They're obviously very capable, but I mean, the whole thing is so obviously this very old-fashioned, old media idea of what a newspaper should be, you know, and the idea is that the iPad could facilitate the preservation of that particular model, but I don't think it's doing very well.
No. It costs a fortune to produce, too. They're losing money like crazy on that thing.
Yeah. And I think the big problem with the dailies is there's no links out. It is like a newspaper. In fact, when I read the newspaper now, I'm going, gee, I want to share this article. I would like to share this. How do I? I used to, when I was, so for many years as a radio talk show host, this is the process every radio talk show host went through for many years. You take the newspaper, you take a razor blade, and you'd shave out articles. And every talk show host used to go into their show with a manila folder full of razored articles.
I used to do that for NPR's Obit Prep.
Right.
I would go through
That's
and I'd razor out
stuff.
Articles and put them in a folder so that when Cary Grant died, they could go
ready.
Pull it out and they'd have all their
the
research.
I got the file right here. Boom. Now I go through Flipboard and I press tweet this, tweet this, tweet this, tweet this, tweet this. I have a links for Twitter feed, and all the articles we want to talk about are there, and sharing them not just with our editors and other hosts, but with the world. It's an amazing... wonderful thing if you could just get your head around it, and instead of saying, as Rupert Murdoch does, but you're stealing my content. It's not Rupert.
But you're stealing my content.
You're stealing my content.
Hey, it's apparently 5 minutes until Reddit comes back.
Oh, I don't want Reddit to come back. I want this day to last forever. I think big kudos to Reddit and... their editor, I'm trying to remember the name, who I think was the person who is it? I mean let's Google this.
Eric is a fellow, I know.
That's right. Who thought of all of this, and called you guys and everybody else and said, "Let's do it."
I don't think that was Eric, though.
It wasn't Eric.
Mark, can you remember who it was?
No, sorry, I don't remember.
Well, whoever it was, I hope we can find a name.
Oh, what a pair of assholes we are.
No.
But, you know, I wanted to... Earlier, Leo, you asked if any Congress people read Boing Boing. And I actually remember yesterday, the press secretary for Congressman Tim Ryan from Ohio emailed me a tweet that Congressman Ryan wrote, "Web piracy is an issue that should be dealt with, but I oppose SOPA because it does too much harm to innovation and speech." And then he name-checked EFF and Boing Boing. And then the press secretary, Jared Kurtz, said, "Keep up the great work. We're all big fans of Boing Boing." So
okay. I take it back.
Tim Ryan from Youngstown, Ohio.
I guarantee you there are hundreds, if not thousands, of congressional staffers who read Boing Boing because they're young and hip and with it. This was the original post from January 10th, 2012 on blog.reddit. "Stopped they must be on This All Depends." The original proposal only a week ago that Reddit blackout and the others do so. So there you go, and it doesn't have a byline, as one would guess, the egalitarian nature of Reddit.
Jason Harvey posted their technical examination of SOPA and Protect IP. I don't think he was the guy proposing.
Well, and there's a, you know, /r/SOPA, so there's a lot of good resources on the net. Gentlemen, Rob and Mark, so great to have you on these final waning minutes of the Block SOPA Day, a day of celebration, I think, for the Internet, a victory for the Internet, but a fight that has not been won and must be fought every day.
Even the DNS provisions are just shelved. They're not killed.
Nothing's dead.
So we were talking to Declan McCullough about that earlier.
Yeah.
When's Boing Boing coming back up? Because I kind of miss it.
I do,
midnight.
Too.
Midnight Eastern.
Midnight Eastern. Okay.
9 o'clock here on the West
Coast. So we got 4 hours. 4 hours of finger in there, biting anxiety. Thank you so much, Mark Fraunfelder, Rob Esquiza, for joining us. Thank you for your fight. Thank you for your post. Thank you for making one of the most exciting and fun and intelligent sites on the internet, boingboing.net. And as SCF says, this show is too intelligent. We must censor it. So now, without further ado, young ladies, jumping on trampolines. Oh, I'm sorry, you won't be able to see that, will you?
This show is a circumvention tool.
It is. We teach people how to think for themselves. Shocking. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Great to see you again. Take care.
Yeah. Bye, you guys.
Bye-bye. And we thank you all for joining us. Next week, back to... actually, you're going to Hawaii.
No, not next week.
That's not like next week?
A couple weeks from now.
Okay, yeah. So we'll have a triangulation next week, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right at midnight UTC on twit.tv. Please do watch. We always have some great guests on here and talk smart talk. This is the smart show on the Twit. Actually, they're all smart.
That's why we need guests.
The whole freaking The whole freaking network is designed for intelligent people. So if you're watching, pat yourself on the back. You're one of them.
You're smart.
This Week in Radio Tech is coming up in moments. Tom Merritt, thank you very much.
Thank you, Leo.
I think you've got me sick, so that's good.
Good.
I'll be taking tomorrow off. Thank you very much. Thank you all for joining us. We will stay black and white, I guess, till we are done with live coverage. And then we'll go into reruns, which will also be in black and white because that's how we shot it. So God knows how long this could last. But we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation.